You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Welcome to the BFM studio, Renee.
Kia ora. Thank you very much for having me.
I recognise your voice.
Yeah, I've been on the radio a little while.
Now, we are, of course, talking about Audio Culture's album, which came out maybe about 12 months ago. It's on the Book of Biffin.
So this feature today is very, very, very close to the hearts of, you know, the BFM radio station and the BFM listeners, because once upon a time we had our own magazine.
Yes. When did BFM have its own magazine?
So we actually had two magazines, so I'm going to talk about both of them, but I'll start with the Book of Biffin, which its first issue came out in 1985. It was kind of, there were a few events leading up to it being launched. Debbie Gibbs, absolutely legendary, incredible woman, was the station manager from 1983 to 1984. Mm-hmm. And during that time, she managed to get BFM an FM frequency, which was no easy feat at that time because radio regulations were incredibly tight. So she played a blinder and pulled one out of the bag and got BFM on FM frequency. I have to say, BFM wasn't the first station to go FM. It was actually our sister station, Radioactive, was the first student station to go FM in 1982, I think they did it. And also, happy birthday, Radioactive. They're 45 years old this year.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah, BFM did it in 1984, and so to launch the new frequency, Debbie decided it would be quite cool to launch a magazine. So what she did was, she was station manager, got the frequency to FM. Then after she did that, she decided that she'd like to change roles, and she became BFM's promotions manager, because what she really wanted to do was promote BFM's new sound and new frequency. So to do that, she thought it would be awesome to set up a magazine, and that was the Book of Biffin.
Pretty savvy move.
Very savvy move, and it collected all the best music writers and artists and of the time, and it was just, you know, wild and alternative and different. And I mean, you had, you know, Rip It Up was wonderful, but then they covered alternative and commercial music, whereas BFM was, you know, the Book of Biffin was straight down the line alternative.
Yes.
And so it did a few, it ran till the end of 1998, so that's like 3 years, I think. Oh, yeah, and the other thing was, it launched, so BFM's first frequency was 91.8. I was going to ask you if we've got that Chills promo where they sing from 91.8 from us to you. It's a really old one. Anyway, the Chills did a promo when BFM became FM.
Renee, what I think is kind of important to remind everyone, I mean, especially with some of our younger listeners, people kind of just sort of think social media has been around forever, but this is all happening in a time when there wasn't any internet and people used these publications for, you know, what they'd be doing on the weekend, or to find out, you know, what was happening around town, or when and what they could be listening to on the radio. So it's a fairly, you know, crucial piece of, you know, like paper with all the deets on there, what you could be doing and listening to.
Yeah, that's right. I believe it was monthly, so, but they did, I mean, they actually, a huge part of the advertising was gigs coming up, especially internationals. So the way that the Book of Biffin was structured was that no one actually got paid to write for it. I mean, it's, you know, kind of like student radio has always been, no one, you know, everyone does it for love. So they did run advertising, and the ads paid for the printing. And the printing, you know, costs were offset. You know, if you didn't have ads, you couldn't print. But there was an incredible collection of artists that drew, you know, designed covers for the magazine, and, you know, amazing people that wrote in the magazine. A lot of music writers that are highly respected now, and some of the covers, like Chris Knox, was very well known for doing
Biffham covers.
Yeah. And then you've got David Mitchell from the 3Ds, who's also an amazing artist. John Colley from Straitjacket Fits. You've got the page up. Actually, listeners, I'll just say, definitely go to the Book of Biffham article on audio culture, because the ads and the covers are just astounding.
Yes.
They're so cool.
There's also a lot of handwritten stuff in there because, you know, this is in an era.
It's pre you know, desktop computer publishing and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So Debbie, the first editor, Debbie Gibbs, had to basically put the magazine together by hand. Mm-hmm. So not only was she, you know, promotions manager for BFM, but in the weekend she spent her whole weekend
sellotaping,
cutting up pictures, cutting up letters, cutting up stories, putting them on pages on her bedroom floor. So she'd spend, you know, the weeks leading up to it hustling the writers for their articles. Mm-hmm. Apparently you sent it to the typesetter and you had one shot to get it right, and she said if there were any errors, she actually had to take it back, recut it, and paste it all back together again before it went to print.
There's a great ad in here for Shadows. Yes. Live music, Wednesday to Friday, happy hours, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m., tap beer and house wine.
So Shadows has been going a very long time.
Kind of. I guess probably similar. It's been around since sort of, you know, the same length of time as BFM, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Oh, the other thing, what you're looking at now, so the first issue of the Book of Biffham in 1985, at the beginning of the year, featured the top 50 songs played on BFM in 1984. Mm-hmm. And it's just phenomenal. It's such a cool time capsule of what music was being played on BFM at the time.
Yeah. I mean, they're all very classic artists. You've got Nick Cave, Verlaine's, The Fall, Children's Hour, The Chills, The Bats, Hunters and Collectors, just Gun Club.
Yeah.
You know, so The Great Unwashed. So many, you know, I guess, it's so alternative. Stuff that I guess still stacks up today.
Oh, it all stacks up today. I think I had a look through it earlier today and I can't see anything that's...
You're like, I'll use this for rubbish. My show on Friday night.
I was thinking it would actually be a huge amount of fun to do, like, radio shows based on previous BFM top 10s.
Yeah. Someone actually pulled out a ring binder up here in the office not too long ago, and it had BFM used to do, like, a top... I don't know, top 100 or top 95 every year.
Yeah.
It's like the Squid Bar, top 100 of 1996.
Well, I've got friends here to actually compile the top 10s every Wednesday, and they've got, I think they've actually got the documents with all the top 10s on them.
Yep.
Which is really awesome. I remember my own silly memory is I was at school at the time, at high school, and there was one telephone in the school, like, corridor. Mm-hmm. So every Wednesday at lunchtime, I would go and ring up BFM and put my vote in for the top 10.
Oh, nice.
All my friends thought I was insane. I said, oh, no, here she goes again, voting for the BFM top 10.
Oh, two votes for the B card as well.
Yeah. Well, there was no B card then.
Oh, no B card
no
then.
No B card.
Yeah.
One vote. Nice. One chance. Yeah.
Now, Renee, should we play a tune?
Yes. So I've selected the Straitjacket Fits Darling Prayer. For a number of reasons. I mean, they were a massive band on BFM anyway. This is from their first EP, Life in One Chord, which came out in 1998. So the Book of Biffham had been around for a while. They were actually also managed by Debbie Gibbs. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's sort of a thing of, oh, my band, I'm managing this band and I'm running this magazine, so that, you know, I'm going to write about them. It was like they genuinely were a very, very loved band by the BFM listenership. So I think they appeared on two covers of the Book of Biffham, if I'm correct. It's just a classic BFM song.
Thank you.
We're here talking about Audio Culture's Book of Biffim article. And Renee, are we going to move forward in time?
Yeah, I think we will. I just want to mention one thing. We were, Johnny and I were just looking at the ads before, and there's a band that's still played on BFM, Dead Famous People, mm-hmm. you may have heard of. Anyway, in one of the Book of Biffims, there's an ad that Don Savage placed for a drummer for the band. So you can go and have a look at that. That's really cool. And they're still going, which is amazing. So good. So Biffim, the Book of Biffim ran till the end of 1988.
Yes.
And then there was kind of like new management took over. And although actually I do quickly want to say that Biffim wasn't purely an alternative rock magazine. Like they actually did some amazing articles on the wider cultural landscape mm-hmm. of New Zealand. Like they covered dance shows, contemporary dance, mm-hmm. Choreographers and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And they went back into jazz history and they talked to independent record labels like Ode Records, who distributed the most specific music albums probably in the world.
Yes.
So, you know, they weren't just alternative rock, mm-hmm. which is something to bear in mind. Mm-hmm. And then Monitor, at the beginning of 1989, they thought it might be good to just sort of change it up a little bit. There was a new station managers, and they basically thought, well, I mean, rock was still relevant, mm-hmm. but BFM was actually also getting more into the
into hip hop.
Yeah, into hip hop and dance. The dance movement was exploding.
Yes,
club culture was exploding.
There's a photo of the cover of Monitor in 1991 features MC OJ and Rhythm Slave
surfing.
Yeah,
it's awesome. You need to go and have a look at that, yeah. Everyone. It's so cool. So yes, so Paul Casterly took over as the editor. Oh, I should mention a couple of people from the Book of Biffim actually, because it's remiss of me not to.
Yes.
So Debbie Gibbs was the first editor, and then Jonathan Ganley, who's an amazing photographer, mm-hmm. especially of music. He's also known as Point That Thing. He was the editor after her. Those are the only two editors I could find. There may be others, so if any listeners out there know, if anybody else edited the Book of Biffham, let me know. Mm-hmm. But there's also in the Book of Biffham story interviews with Ian Dalziel, who is a legendary graphic designer who also worked for Flying Nun and Rip It Up. And he actually did the distribution of the magazine for free. He just took it round shops for no money because mm-hmm. he was a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in 1989, Simon Lahn, a.k.a. Nick D'Angelo, was station manager, and they just thought it needed a bit of an upgrade, I suppose, or mm-hmm. a refresh.
Yes.
And the difference between, you know, the 80s and the 90s magazines is quite different. Like, the production values are completely different.
Yeah.
It's on bigger paper, glossy paper.
A lot tidier.
Yeah.
Not so much handwritten.
Sort of graphic design stuff.
Yep, yep.
Not saying that the other ones weren't amazing as well, because they absolutely are, and they're just so different, mm-hmm. and they're both absolute gold mines. So Paul Casserly was the first editor of Monitor,
mm-hmm.
who people may remember from BFM, and he's gone on to doing awesome things in television since then. So he ran it for a while, and he was quite, you know, at the forefront of the, I guess, you know, electronic music becoming a thing that people loved. So he ran it for a while, and then he left to pursue his career in Straw People, which did very well indeed.
Yes.
So then a chap called Michael Lamb took over Monitor's editing. He was the editor of Crackham,
mm-hmm.
and then it just sort of naturally fitted that he, because he was interested in arts and culture and music and all that sort of thing, so it sort of naturally fitted that he take the reins from Paul Casserly. And there was definitely, there was a lot more hip-hop, more dance.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Gregg did the dance column
mm-hmm.
called Dance Floor. At that time, he was also running, Siren Nightclub, mm-hmm. which became The Box. So he had his fingers on the pulse in that area. He also did the dance show on BFM, which was, I think, the first dance show in Auckland.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and I mean, Monitor had some amazing writers as well. Oscar Keitley used to write for Monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And you had sort of BFM legends like Matthew Tetley-Jones and Simon Coffey, and
mm-hmm.
Older listeners will remember them, Andrew Dubber.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Coffey, the master of Metal Mayhem.
There's there's an ad in here, and there's an example of some printout of the Monitor magazine. There's an ad for a B card.
Yes, in 1990. The B card started. Yes.
$30 for a B card in 1990.
It's a lot of money now, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess it was probably, I don't know, $30 doesn't seem like much.
Oh, no, because it was for a whole year, it wasn't
a whole year.
Yeah, you bought one B card and it lasted you all year.
At $4.20 a month. At the moment, it's about $50 a year for a B card. So we're still pretty reasonably priced, everyone.
Yeah.
Get a B card, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. And then we had the Bombathons as well, which mm-hmm. were like telethons for BFM to sell B cards, and they were huge amounts of fun too, but that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do remember Oscar Keitley doing a burger run. I was doing a Bombathon one night. I was here all night with a whole bunch of other volleys, and he felt sorry for us and went and got us a whole bunch of burgers, so that was nice. Monitor was really popular.
Mm-hmm.
Both the magazines were incredibly popular. Like, you know, people would wait for them to arrive in the record stores and just, you know, vulture over them and grab them up.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what happened was it was getting a little bit tricky, because I suppose Monitor was, Biffham was more in tune with the station, like writing about what was going on the station.
Mm-hmm.
Monitor sort of set itself up as a little bit separate from the station, like mm-hmm. becoming more of a general arts and culture magazine rather than dedicated to what BFM was doing.
Yeah.
So that probably
set both teams against one another
in
a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were doing great work, but mm-hmm. I guess the core role is to promote the station
mm-hmm.
above all else.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm thinking about it, one other thing. They had cartoons including, I don't know if anyone remembers, Cornelius Stone and Roger Langridge's Knuckles the Malevolent Nun,
mm-hmm.
which is a legendary New Zealand comic series, and Monitor had that, but apparently one of their, it could be quite offensive. I mean, if you're doing a cartoon about a nun, it's probably not going to be great, you know, wholesome. And I think there was one edition, one, you know, version of the cartoon that they print, that they wrote, that was so offensive that the printer wouldn't print it.
Goodness.
Yes, I'll have to ask Cornelius, who's a friend of mine, what that was.
Surely someone, I guess if it never got printed.
If it never got printed, nobody knows apart from the artists.
Yes. Now, Renee, thank you for coming in this afternoon having a chat about the Book of Biffum and Monitor. Both articles are pretty easy to find on audioculture.co.nz. Should we go out on one last song?
Yeah, so Monitor folded at the end of 1991. Probably a little bit sadly in some ways, especially with the people who were involved, because they basically couldn't round up enough advertising to get the 1992 first issue off the ground. Mm-hmm. And I think that was when the station, you know, staff and board decided that, you know, we're spending a lot of time and money on this, and is this really what we should be focusing on? I mean, as everyone knows, student radio is expensive and budgets are small. Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't need to be doing a magazine at the moment.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My last song is Jules Isa, Dangerous Game. This is a massive hit in the clubs and on BFM. And thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Janae. Let's hear it.
Return to the ways of old.
was
Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just fascination.